You're listening to Melissa and Lori Love Literacy. We know you have so many questions about teaching spelling, and we know that you want evidence-based tips that you can use in your class tomorrow. We've got you. In this episode, our teacher friend Savannah Campbell is here to share her best spelling tips and routines.
Sometimes a podcast is enough, and sometimes you might want something more.
So we wrote a book answering your questions called The Literacy 50, a Q&A handbook for teachers, real-world answers to questions about reading that keep you up at night.
It's a handbook that includes downloadable resources for planning and instruction. You'll love the practical tips we supply to bridge the research-to-practice gap.
Pre-order your copy now on Amazon.
Hi, teacher friends. I'm Lori.
And I'm Melissa.
We are two educators who want the best for all kids, and we know you do too.
We worked together in Baltimore when the district adopted a new literacy curriculum.
We realized there was so much more to learn about how to teach reading and writing.
Lori and I can't wait to keep learning with you today.
Hi, everyone. In episode 191, Pam Kastner talked about how teaching spelling is teaching reading. Spelling binds orthography, phonology, and semantics, or spelling to sound and meaning. She shared research-based reasons for teaching spelling. Today, we are extending that conversation to include super practical spelling tips from one of our favorite teacher friends.
Yes, and our teacher friend is Savannah Campbell. We know her from Instagram as Campbell Creates Readers, but in real life, she is a K-5 reading specialist, and we just learned a fun fact about her, which is that she has taught her entire career at the school where she went to as a child. Welcome to the podcast, Savannah. We're so excited you're here.
Thank you for letting me be here. I'm so excited. I've talked about it all week.
Well, we can't wait to dive into spelling with you today. We know you have so many practical tips, and I know you're going to share them with our listeners. But first, can you share some general advice? Like, what advice would you give to teachers about spelling instruction?
Yeah, so I kind of have some general spelling tips. These are the things that I do with all of my groups, whether it's my first grade babies all the way up through my fifth grade ones. And the first thing I always say is that we want our kids to say the sounds or syllables as they're spelling. So we know that when we are spelling, what we're doing is we're taking the sounds in a word that we know, and we're trying to map those sounds to the symbols, aka the letters that represent those sounds. So I find that when children are learning to spell and learning to read, it's really important to have them say the sounds, because that's what it's all about, right? It's all about making sure that we have the sound to symbol correspondence. And I find that when we don't ask our kids to do that, there's a lot that ends up missing from their spelling. And also, when you're sitting next to a kid and you hear them saying the sounds, it makes it a lot easier for you to correct any errors. Like if a child is making the f or v sound instead of having their tongue between their teeth with the sound. But then I don't stop there. Even with my older kiddos, I have them say the sounds, but instead of having them say sounds, I have them say syllables. So when we are writing a multisyllabic word, what I'll have them do is we will count the syllables together, and then I have them draw a line for each syllable in a word. And this is really helpful for them because I let them know that every syllable must have a written vowel. So we've all seen kiddos when they're spelling a word that has that R sound that just writes an R, or when there's a consonant LE syllable and they don't include the E. So by having them do the lines like that and making sure that they have at least one vowel per line, I found that it helps to eliminate a lot of, not all of the poor spelling, but it really does help. And when I was thinking about this, though, I am an interventionist. So I don't think that when you are in a place in the classroom where you are having kids like write an essay, I'm not expecting my kids to do lines for every single word that they are writing. This is something that I'm doing specifically when I'm doing things like dictation in an intervention group. So when kids are in the general classroom, yes, when we are in small group or when we are doing dictation, I'm going to ask them to do these things. But when we're writing children, asking children to write longer things, it's not practical to expect them to do it for every little thing. So just kind of keep in mind just the place where you would do it. So this is a new word I learned this year. I've been doing this for years, but I just learned the word interleaving. So I've always just called it cumulative review, but interleaving sounds fancier. So interleaving is probably the most critical thing that you could do for your children's spelling. And what it means is you are having them practice both the new skills that you are teaching them with the old skills. And I have to be honest that this is probably the biggest downfall I see in classrooms. I know it was a downfall for me. So what we often see is a classroom will teach children magic E. Right? We're learning A consonant E this week. And then everything we are spelling has an A consonant E. So what ends up happening? Every word a child writes is going to suddenly have an E at the end. So it's not just about whether or not they can spell those skills that we are teaching this week. It's can they apply it in connection to all the other things that we've already done? And we know that after first grade, spelling is going to lag behind reading. So we've got to do whatever we can to help them achieve mastery. And so when we continue to have that cumulative review with the new stuff, that's where I really think it's going to give us the biggest bang for our buck. And I always tell teachers, like, okay, so say you're going to have them spell 10 words. Have 5 of them be the words for the week and 5 of them be words from before. We just can't get stuck in only teaching them something new and never going back to the old stuff.
I think that makes so much sense too in so many things, but especially in spelling, where kids can see their success grow, right? And also they can feel familiar. Thinking about having a spelling test as a kid or looking at my own child, going in to take a test of 100% new things, you know, rather than just maybe 50 or 60% new. It's funny because I actually found a spelling test from when I was younger, Savannah, like very recently, and like my own spelling test. And they were all based on like the phonics patterns I was learning. So it's really funny to like go back and see that. But it did look like it's exactly what you described as being like 100% new each week based on that pattern that I had just learned.
And then we expect them to remember it forever.
Oh, it reminds me of like I've tried to learn Spanish. I mean, since middle school when I took it in school, but it never stuck. And it's always that, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So it's the same thing, same principle there. You know, if we don't have them keep using it, they're not going to remember.
We can't expect them to do things if we're not continuously practicing it. And that's actually was my third tip: practice more than you ever thought necessary. If you do nothing in a small group lesson except for give authentic practice in spelling and reading, like say you're running short on time that day and you don't have time for your whole lesson and you just want to practice, like that is so powerful. There was some Reading League article a long time ago, and I just remember her saying, practice is the one thing you cannot overdo. And I really believe that we have to save space for our children to practice the skills that we are currently teaching and the skills that we have already taught. Reading a decodable one day a week isn't going to cut it. Having children spell their spelling words on Monday and then never doing anything again until Friday is not going to cut it. We have to give them practice. And I know that time is so short and time is so precious, but the practice is the part that is going to help them to reach automaticity. And we just cannot give that up. And then the last one that I was going to say, which is going to lead us into the different practices, is that we want to keep the same routine, but we can vary the methods. I think people are like, oh, well, if we just have them spell every day and if we just have them read every day, it's boring. But that doesn't mean that we have to do it exactly the same way every single day. So there are ways that we can vary the methods that we are using while still reaching the same outcome, which is proficient spelling or proficient reading.
All great tips, Savannah. And I mean, we've talked about phonemic awareness instruction and connecting it to letters with a lot of recent guests, and interleaving has come up quite a few times, but usually we're talking about decoding. So I'm glad that you're bringing in some of these same ideas with spelling instruction.
And I think, you know, there's this misconception out there that some kids are just destined to be bad spellers. And I don't believe that. I actually sat in the IEP meeting one time where the teacher was like, oh, it's fine. You know, some kids are just bad spellers. And I'm just like, no, we have to give our kids enough practice and enough skills so that they can go and be proficient. And I truly believe that every child can reach that level of functioning, even if it's not, you know, we don't have to be Pulitzer Prize winning novelists, okay? We just need to be able to function well enough that we can do whatever we want in our lives, whether it's reading or spelling.
I know that our listeners heard you talk about some routines and you mentioned dictation, and I'm sure you have some more, but I know they want to hear more about those because that's what they can do in their classroom. So can you share a little bit about those specific routines with us?
Yeah, so every day in my lesson, I have a couple. So I keep the same routine, like I had said, and reviewing reading and reviewing spelling is part of that routine. So I also do spelling when I'm introducing a new rule, but most of the what I'm talking about today is kind of going to be the reviewing, because I think that that's really where we can grow a lot. And dictation is the most simple, easiest, powerful thing that we can do for our children. I don't think I ever did dictation when I was actually in the classroom. I didn't know any better. I think my spelling activities included things like write each letter in a different color, or write your words three times each, or put them in ABC order. And you know what? They weren't better spellers at the end of the year. What a shocker, you
know?
That's
what we did as kids too, so.
I know, and it's still unfortunately happening, but it's not happening out of a place of malice. It's happening out of a place where, well, what else are we supposed to do? So I'm hoping that I can give you some insight. Dictation is easy. I use these half composition books from Walmart. They come out every year just at the school, back to school time, and you can get a pack of 10 for $4.88. I love them. I know some people, they go and they cut composition books in half. It really doesn't matter what you use, just keeping in mind that we need to ask our children to be successful in the manner in which they are expected to be successful in life. And one of those things is by putting a pencil to a piece of paper and writing. So when I do dictation, just for time's sake, there's no magic behind this number, is I just have them write 1 through 5. And then what I have them do is write a mixture of words that we've already spelled, or sorry, of the mixture of skills that we've already learned. So not necessarily the words we've already spelled. So 1 through 4, I normally just do a single word, but number 5, I'll often have them write a sentence. And this is my procedure for sentence dictation. Because as soon as you start to say the sentence, these children are going to start writing it. So I make them put their hands in the air and I say, repeat after me. So if I say, I like riding my bike, they have to repeat it. And then we count it. I like riding my bike. How many words? 5. So then after that, they can either write it or they can draw 5 lines and they can write it that way. Sometimes I draw the lines for them because they don't quite get how long they should be. But then as they're spelling it, if my sentence was, I like riding my bike, and the kid looks at me after like and says, what's next? And I just say writing, and then says, what's next? My. And that's at that point, we're not doing sentence level dictation anymore. We're doing word dictation. And we need our children to be able to hold a sentence in their minds and then write it. So it can be that simple. 1 through 5, do 4 words that are skills you've already learned. And then the last one could be a sentence.
I bet that gives you a lot of great intel about the students who are struggling to hold that sentence level dictation and the ones who are off and running. And then I'm wondering what do you do from there?
You mean what do we do spelling wise?
What do you do after they can't get that sentence level dictation? Like, what is your next step intervention there? Is it spelling related?
No, that seems more like a working memory thing for me. I would either give them a smaller sentence or have them repeat it until they can do it. But I mean, and if I have to repeat the sentence a bunch of times, I will. Like if they every time ask me what it is, I just say, I like riding my bike. What is it? I like riding my bike. The second thing that I was going to say, so dictation is your basic. The second thing I would say would be word chains. And I think word chains I first probably heard about from the Kilpatrick book, Equipped for Reading Success. He has a lot of different things. Actually, I pulled out my dry erase board, so I will show you, but then I will also hopefully give enough context so that if you're just listening to this, you will also hear. So what is a word chain and why is it powerful? A word chain is when you give a child a word and then each subsequent word differs by one sound. And it's a really cool practice because it blends both phonemic awareness and phonics, and it produces an accurate spelling. It blends phonemic awareness and phonics because the children have to recognize which part of the word the sound is changing, and then they have to then match that to the appropriate symbols. So I'm going to go through maybe just like five words, because even though I know a lot of people do word chaining, I think sometimes what we do is we give away too much. So if I said, if I was reviewing, say, digraphs, and I wanted them to spell the word chill, okay, so the first word would be chill, and I would ask them to say the sounds that they are, that as they're spelling, ch, ill. And then I normally do it on a dry erase board. So what we do is after that, I would say, I want you to change one sound in chill to make the word chin. You notice I don't say I want you to take away the two L's. I don't say I want you to take off the last letters. I just say I want you to change one sound, which does not always mean one letter, to make the word chin. So they would erase this. And then I want them to again say the sounds and blend to read the word. We're always going to go back to saying the sounds and blending to read the word.
So real quick, Savannah, I'm just going to add in for people that are listening. So you erase the two L's at the end and added in an N. So now it's chin.
Thank you for that. Yes. So then I have chin. I have C-H-I-N. And I would say, I want you to change one sound in chin to make the word chip. So they would have to know that they take away the N and they replace it with a P. And then I would have them say the sounds and blend. And I'll just do one more word. I will say, I want you to change one sound in chip to make it say chap. And so they would have to take away the I, replace it with an A, say the sounds and blend. And I normally go through about 10 words when I do it. The downfall in this is that sometimes it can be very focused on one skill as opposed to like a cumulative one. So a lot of times I'll do this. Say I introduce my children to the digraph CH, the next day I would then do a word chain on it. But I do some that are kind of mixed up. The worst thing that you can do is not write down your words before you do this.
I was just going to say that, Savannah. I feel like this is, I learned that by very early on, I was trying this out and I didn't, I was like, oh, cool. This seems like I'm going to try it out. And I didn't prepare the words. I prepared a couple. Then they loved it so much they wanted to keep going, and I didn't have words prepared, and it was awful. I was like, I don't know. I can't think of anything right now. So definitely prepare your words.
So yes, prepare your words as much as you can for all of these activities. It takes a little bit of time on the back end, but then you're going to reap the rewards later while you're not panicking.
So Savannah, quick question about that. I mean, if you have a student who they are changing it, but they change it to a different, not the correct letter, do you just jump in and share with them the right letter or guide them to get to the right one?
Yeah, if the word was chin and they changed it, the first thing I always ask them to do is I ask them to tell me the sounds and then touch it as they are saying the sounds. And so say they got for chin, they changed the N to a T or something like that. I'm like, okay, well, what sound did you say needed to be here? Okay, well, you wrote this sound down. So what should it actually be? And this is why it's really helpful doing this in a small group. You can do it in whole group too, but doing it in small group, you're able to do that immediate feedback really easily, which we know is so powerful. That was a great question. And then too, if I have kids that are truly struggling with this, I will say, all right, so this is going to be the first sound. So listen to me as I'm saying this first sound. Your word is chin. What's the first sound you hear in chin? So it's just the level of scaffolding, as little as possible. Start without giving them much of anything at all.
Yeah, and then let them show you that they need it.
The next one, so we're just kind of talking about different ways we can vary the dictation, basically different ways we can do spelling so that they don't get bored and start acting up. Sound boxes. That has been such a huge one in the past couple of years. Sound boxes, word mapping, phoneme grapheme mapping, whatever you want to call it, it's all kind of the same thing. But basically, sound boxes are when you give children a series of boxes. And what they do is each box has to hold the letter or letters that represent a single sound. That's the number one rule. One box, one sound, no matter what. And it's helpful because it helps our kids see that these letters aren't random. You know, so if I'm writing the word light, the G and the H aren't random. They're coming together as part of a vowel team. so that they can be that IGH making an I before a T sound. So I find it very helpful. I think that us as adults have kind of gotten stuck in semantics with it. I see a lot of people that are like literally arguing over sound boxes. And I'm like, at the end of the day, it's about what our children are able to do. So if it's not always perfect, if you put, I put the X in between two boxes, but if a kid put an X on the other one, like it's not the end of the world. We're trying to get them to have that sound symbol correspondence. So I did write down a couple because I thought that I would address some of the ones that people often struggle. Okay, so I'm going to say this out loud and I'm going to show you it. So let's talk about like the word which, right? So which is which. Three sounds, so that TCH must go into one box. So
no, and you're talking like a Halloween.
Yep. Witch. Yep. And I'd probably say it in a sentence. Yep. Then one thing that I notice people are often messing up sometimes, which makes sense because some programs do teach it as one box, is blends. But remember, the rule is one sound, one box. So in a word like slide, the S and the L would both have to go into a separate box because they are separate sounds. Even though they are co-articulated, they keep their own sound. Another thing that jams people up is the welded sounds because of the programs that teach am and ing and ank and onk as like, you know, they put them in one box. Technically, it's not. But I'm not, I mean, the world's not going to end as long as we get to the end goal. But I'm just going technically right here. So in a word like sting, the N and the G is technically one sound, so it goes in one box. But then in a word like blink, which really jacks everything up, the N is a sound and the K is a sound because technically that N is making the ng sound and then the K is its own sound. So I don't want us to get bogged down in semantics so that we're afraid to do it. Because the end goal is proficient spelling. And this is just another scaffold that we can use to help achieve that goal.
Such a good point. Because I do know, you know, when I was trained in foundations that N and G makes the glued sound and ng, but they are technically separate sounds, right? It's just, yeah, they're, it's just in that word.
No, they do ing, ang, ong, ung in one box.
But they're glued, but would they be separate boxes?
I is a separate box. NG is one box. NG is one sound, but ink would be three sounds.
Right. So it would be st. Let's do sting. St. Ing.
Sting has four sounds. Yep. But then.
So they're glued together, but the I's not with it.
Yes.
I didn't articulate that right in the beginning.
So they're glued. I think when they say glued sounds, they put them together because the co-articulation is changing the sound of it. So anything where the vowel is being changed by the subsequent letters, they make it like a welded sound, like the A getting nasalized in am, and then the ing for ing. So that's kind of where they get from it.
Yeah. I could see that being like an off-putting thing for teachers being like, oh my gosh, what, where do I put this in the box? Like I'm supposed to be the expert or at least have an idea of where, and this is, it's tough sometimes to figure it out.
This is what we should be learning when we're becoming teachers.
This is what we should be practicing in college.
Right? Yeah. Can't you imagine if that had actually happened instead of just, oh, give them their just right reading level. That was what I had learned. All right. And then the last tip is just an easy peasy one. Just change the medium. If your kids are getting bored with dictation, just change the way you have them write. I have them write on paper every week, but you can do things like I bought race car pens that literally have little wheels on them, and I give them a minute to play with the race car pens, and then we write. You could use magnetic letters. You can use dry erase boards. You can use anything you want to try to help them with their spelling. Some things are just easier, like with magnetic letters, it takes more time because you're pulling them down, you're putting them back up. Doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just you might not have that kind of time today. So just thinking about different ways that you can alter the medium. Like sometimes I'll even just let them use markers as opposed to a pencil, and that alone has made a big difference for them. So those are kind of all the different ways that I do different spelling throughout the week. So just basic dictation, doing word chains, using sound boxes, and changing up the medium when I can tell my kids are getting bored.
Super helpful.
Such a good point. Yeah. And changing the medium is so simple and just really practical, right? Like a pack of markers and, oh, you get to write with a blue pen today or blue marker today instead of your pen, or even a pen. I mean, gosh, they never get to write with a pen.
I know. Or what if you get colored paper? Oh, they lose it. I will say one more thing for the older kids is getting...
Oh, yeah, that's what I was just about to ask you.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So one way that you can change it up for the older kids is by getting dry erase note cards. So they're like $12 on Amazon for a pack of 40. And with dry erase note cards, it's the size of a note card. And what I have them do is I have them write each card is a syllable. So they say your word was construction, it would be construction, and the same rules are going to apply. You're going to have one vowel per box. But all the rest of it, I kind of do the same thing, except for sound boxes. I will shift it away from writing one box per sound to writing one box per syllable or meaning part. I've seen people who try to ask kids to map words that are multisyllabic, but if our kids are at the point where they're writing multisyllabic words, they don't need to be at the individual sounds level.
That's right.
Yeah. And I say meaning part because, like a great example is the suffix able is technically two syllables, but once we're getting to multisyllabic, we want meaning to be king of everything. So if they know that able is a suffix that means able to or possible, then we're going to have them keep it together, even if it's technically two syllables. And I just decided that because nobody's talking about morphology that much.
I know we love to talk about morphology. So I'm glad that you brought it up. Are there any other things you would give a tip for our older readers? Because I think that they are, I mean, even 3, 4, 5 plus, right? They're the group that we tend to not include in this conversation, but they're spelling more than anyone, honestly, because they're usually doing more writing. So
yeah, I think especially with younger readers, what I see is us starting back at the beginning. But here's the deal. If they are in 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, they've been spelling poorly. They've been reading poorly for 4 years now. So more of the same is not going to cut it. So starting in 3rd grade, I will teach them the 6 syllable types. Within multisyllabic words, because there's no reason where if a kid, you know, is struggling, why they can't have a word like fantastic. It's just 3 closed syllables. So my suggestion for the older kids would be, even if they are struggling, to help them do all of these things within multisyllabic words, because that's where they're going to have to go. And another thing too, with the older kids, and this is more about handwriting rather than spelling, but once a child's in 3rd grade, the amount of effort you would have to put forth in order to change poor handwriting is pretty insurmountable, but that doesn't mean we can't teach them cursive. And cursive is a new lease on getting it right the first time.
Oh, that's a really good point. I didn't think about that. I thought you were going to say typing, but it wouldn't have made sense with the motor skills. So I was curious where you were going.
No, yeah. Cursive is like, it's a chance to get it right again. And I even tell my kids, I'm like, look, I'm an adult. I'm going to teach you all of the cursive letters, but I'm going to show you how as an adult, what I do is I do half cursive and I do half print, because that's the reality. And we can't just, yeah, I don't know anybody who sits there and writes in full cursive, but if you can teach them cursive so that they can eliminate some of those backward letters or some of the illegibility, then it's worthwhile and it's worth taking the time and the effort, because we cannot just assign cursive to our kids. We have to actually teach it. And I guess the one other thing with the older kids, and actually all the kids, is be mindful of the activities that you ask them to do when they are not with you, because spelling activities tend to be easy to assign, but then they don't often hold a lot of value if the kids can do it without actually having to read it or spell it independently. Because just copying a word 3 times is just not, it's just not going to move them forward.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I think, like old ways that we taught spelling that we are now kind of transitioning out, right? Like copying those words, like you said, alphabetizing, rainbow word writing. We probably could go on. But those are things that we, you know, kind of old ways. And now we're transitioning into using the ways that you shared today, right? Dictation, word chain, sound boxes, using different mediums to help students, breaking them up into syllables, if they're older readers, or when they show you that they're ready. And these are such awesome, awesome tips for our listeners.
Yeah. So Savannah, you give tips all the time. So before we say goodbye, we want you to be able to share, where can our listeners find you so they can get more of your tips?
Sure. So I am basically everywhere at Campbell Creates Readers. It's the longest name in the world. I did not know that you should do short names when I started this. I was just a teacher trying to get going. So Campbell, like the soup, creates readers, and I'm on Instagram mostly, but I do have a website underneath the same thing where I blog every other week about all of these different things. And I really try to talk about everything structured literacy. And my goal is always to be the person that I wish I had had when I had gotten started, because I really could have used somebody. And so I try to be that somebody for other people.
Well, we are so grateful that you are here. And we're so glad that you shared all of these amazing tips with our listeners. So thank you, Savannah.
Thank you.
To stay connected with us, sign up for our email list at literacypodcast.com, join our Facebook group, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter.
If this episode resonated with you, take a moment to share with a teacher friend or leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts.
Just a quick reminder that the views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of the Melissa and Lori Love Literacy podcast are not necessarily the opinions of Great Minds PBC or its employees.
We appreciate you so much, and we're so glad you're here to learn with us.